Blog Talk Radio.
Checking your smile, working your back like it's going out of style. Shake just a little bit faster, shake just a little now, girl. I'm dying to meet you, so let's mess around. Got an obsession with us getting down. Come just a little bit closer, I just need permission, so
day today. Really lovely. I was very happy.
Lovely.
Absolutely. Yeah. I enjoyed it. And how about you? Did you get out and about?
I went to church, and that was great, of course. And it was really great, good today. I did have a little trouble following the pastor for part of the time, but for the most part, it was really good. She was talking about, it was a visiting pastor, and she was talking about the Stand Your Ground law.
Mm-hmm.
And Trayvon Martin a little bit, so she was working together in a sermon, and I got kind of lost a little bit for a minute there, but for the most part, I followed her. It was good. For the most part, I followed her, and it was good. So, anyway, but it was cool. How was church for you yesterday?
I wasn't able to make it yesterday. I didn't make it yesterday. I was busy. And I didn't get a chance, not that I was too busy to go to church, but I had a previous engagement, hair appointment that ran over. So I didn't make it. And I was just kind of disappointed, but it was okay. I thought about it. I planned to go, and then when I saw that I was running out of time, I said, well, I'll just have to make up for it on Sunday. So I watched online instead. It's not exactly the same, but at least I wasn't totally missing in action.
Right. And I know you probably watched 30 different services today, right?
I was just finished watching, Fred Price, and they're doing his classics.
Really?
Mm-hmm. From back in the old days, like before I even heard of them. So... They're enriching. It's really good.
Is that possible? Fred Price was around before you heard of Fred Price?
Before I heard of him. And you know what? This is embarrassing. Do you know I have never been to the CCC? Can you believe that?
Oh, have we went together, didn't we?
I don't remember ever going there. That was when I was I never went over there. As far as we went was to that other people. What's that man? What's the name of the Faithful Central or something? Didn't we go there?
We went to Faithful Central, yeah, but you're not talking about James, the other guy, are you?
James Cleveland. I won't. James Cleveland, we went there, but I never remember going to Fred Price. Well, I think because everybody said that if you went there, you would be online for hours and hours. And I was kind of snobby at that time, so to stand on hours and hours of lines was, no, not going to happen. So I went.
I went with, I thought I went with you, actually. So I guess not. It was on the campus. Remember that he bought that campus?
Mm-hmm. I remember that. I knew all about it, but I never went there because the big word was, and you know that was a terrible thing for people to say.
Well, there was a line.
There, so was the was club Paradise.
Yeah, and we stood in those lines. With no problem. We stood in the club line. We did. I know I
remember?
Did. I stood out there. And waited.
Remember when
we
used to go to Carlos and Charlie's and the
and
the world? We'd stand right out there, heels.
The line, yeah, the line was down the block. Yes, we did.
Bunions.
And there was a line, but it was moving very quick. It moved very quickly. So as soon as they let, you know, one service out, they got you in. It was nothing like the lines I used to stand in for CCC here in New York with Dr. Bernard. I told you that we would get there.
Yeah,
and you had to stand in line in a tent and wait for, you had to be there almost before the previous service would start so that you could be in line in time to get in for the following service. So we used to get there, we used to leave here like 5 o'clock in the morning to go stand in line with hopes that you could get in for the 7:30 service. And sometimes,
night?
No, this is in the morning.
Oh, morning.
And
okay.
And sometimes, like two, three people right before you would go in, and they would say, oh, that's it, and you just wanted to cry, and you'd have to stand there for 3 hours until the next service.
For the tent.
But, yeah, but that's not anymore, though, because they've built a new facility, so now there's no lines. But that that was really something, so that was a great service. But anyway, we have a guest on the line. I'm hoping it is the fabulous Daquan Morrison, and we also have our cutting up buddy is here with us tonight. Are you there, Jerome Esprit?
Oh, wonderful!
You know, I had my mute on, and I started to act like I wasn't here, so I just wanted to get your cast before we started talking about me today. Hey, Ronnie.
Hi, Jerome. How are you?
I'm good.
How come you didn't tell me about him when I said standing on the line for Club Paradise?
Hey, you know I was going to go there, so I had to let all of that go, Club Paradise and stuff. I was going to let that bougie stuff go, too, but I didn't want to say nothing. Not bougie. You didn't say bougie. What did you say? You were kind of...
I was a church snob. I wasn't about to stand on the line.
I was going to say, that don't really go away, but we're going to talk about that later. You just suppressed that. Ain't nothing wrong with you being that way. I'm here to tell you. I don't stand in line either, but I don't really go to places that I have to stand in line. So it's kind of a give and take in there some way.
Oh, okay. So I can release the guilt and the conviction.
Yeah, there's no guilt in that. There is no guilt in that. If they don't have the pew up front, you don't really have to wait. Just come on up here. Concierge service at church.
Well, you know what was bothering me today when I went to church? I just, I said, okay, well, either they're going to put a widescreen out on Merrick Boulevard or I'm not going inside unless, I don't understand why they don't have valet parking at church. What's the problem? Why do I have to drive all over creation to find a parking space? They should have a valet.
You know what?
Yeah.
And that's why
we did have a valet in our church, remember?
Yeah, in California, every place has a valet. The gym,
the church,
the salon,
Ralph.
You name it.
No, what do you call it? What do you guys call the supermarket here? What's the biggest supermarket here?
Pathmark?
The Stop and Shop, the Pathmark.
They have valets at the store?
Yeah.
Yes.
The grocery store. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And we use them, Jerome.
And you cannot be mad about being a snob. When somebody gives you a valet, you know what? That's almost like saying, ooh, I need an extra napkin, and calling someone to get a napkin for you. Like, that is pure, lazy.
You can't do that?
I guess you guys can if somebody's going to go get it. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, my God.
If somebody is going to do it for you, I can see why that would be somebody's normal behavior, hence Mitt Romney. But we'll go into politics later. But
yeah, okay.
That's why they act like that.
I know. But we did go to, remember we used to go to the valet parking at Safeway?
We did. Yep.
At the mall.
What the mall is different, because I can see that being a lot of, like, just being a lot of parking, right? Like, it's packed. But I can't see a grocery store. Like, it's like you pay valet parking to get some extra eggs. Like you pay, for the amount of money you probably spent in there, you paid more for valet parking, which is funny.
It was so wonderful.
You should have just pulled up and had somebody run in and go, could you pick me up this, this, and that? And
well,
I'll
we
be
did.
Back
you know, that came
minutes.
Years later. That came years later when they would call.
And you didn't even have to go, right?
No, you didn't. No, because you would say, I'd like to have dinner from whatever. Bourbon Street was a really nice Cajun restaurant. And we would say, okay. And they say, what do you want? And you give them your entree order and everything. And they say, on the way back, could you stop at such and such a place, because I need a roll of paper towels and I need some soap, and and they would go to every store you need and bring it all. I needed to leave there. I needed to come back to New York and get back to and snap back to reality, where people are like, "You need what? Excuse me? Oh my God! Nobody's giving you anything." A lady yelled at me so bad today. How are you paying?
What do you mean?
That's what I was like, what? Listen, how are you paying? Are you going to pay credit? Are you paying debit? You have to tell me. I was like, oh, I'm terrified. They scare me.
Good night. That's not how I'm supposed to be treated. The customer's supposed to come first. Yeah, that can be a little stressful. But all I was saying is that is interesting that just being in that climate will make you act a certain way, and it shows why some little kids don't know how to act because nobody, you know, they don't have to get anything themselves. So they look at adults and expect them to react. Like I think I told the story where I was at this sandwich place, and I'm standing in line, and this girl, this little kid, and it was a long line, and I'm not the only black person in line, but I'm kind of, there's some black folks who are probably a couple of people behind me, and the little girl walked up who was not black, and she looked at everybody in the line, and she looked at me, how black folks said, dead in my eye. She looked at me in the face and said not a word and just walked in front of me. I started laughing. I thought it was funny because it's kind of a bad blooper. So, because I looked at her father, because I was gonna beat him down. Because he didn't say anything. So, and the woman didn't say anything. So the little girl had privilege. And as soon as she got up to the counter, I said, take your butt to the back of the line because you were getting nothing. And this father looked at me. And I looked at him, and I told the black people behind me, do not let this little girl get in front of you. She's gonna least respect black people. I don't care who she respects. Outside of that,
you let them have
business.
It like that.
Yay! And that is not my business. I'd beat her father down. Now that was not my problem. My problem was she sized up everybody and had a privilege. The little kid, she was a little kid. If she'd have asked me, I'd have let her go ahead of me. But nobody's ever taken my lunch money, even an 8-year-old. Nobody has taken my lunch money before.
Well, we can talk about the woes of the youth, but we have a really phenomenal one on the line with us tonight.
Oh,
he
yeah.
is exemplary. My goodness, my vocabulary. An exemplary young man. He is an author, and he's extremely patient because he has been here on the line for the past 2 weeks looking for me, and I was missing in action. So I want to absolutely, first of all, congratulate Daquan Morrison for his phenomenal book that he has released, and also thank him for his incredible patience as he's back with us tonight to talk about his book, and I'm going to let him tell us all about it when we bring to the line. Hold on a second, because I got to find the... I got to find the applause. As we bring to the line, Mr. Daquan Morrison. Yay! Where's the applause? Where's the applause? Wait, hold on. There we go. There we go. Mr. Daquan Morrison. Daquan, welcome. Ask Kathleen, how are you tonight? Daquan, are you there? Did we lose Daquan? Is everybody else there?
Well, maybe my story about the little kid threw him.
I know. I hope he didn't get scared and hang up.
I'm sorry. I should have known that he was coming on first. My bad. I was late there.
Daquan, did we lose you? I guess so. Well, if you can hear us, call back in because your mic was I have your mic open on the board. So call back in and we'll get right back to you. So, okay, so Jerome, did you beat the girl's father up?
No. See, here's where I have to pull back from the kids. I'm glad you told me that he's going to be there. All I'm saying is it was a lesson to not raise your kids to be too spoiled, because when they go out to the real world, it's a little harsh when you take privilege on other people.
Yeah.
You know, and so the moral of the story was I did let her get up to the counter before I sent her back, which was sounds kind of cruel on my part because I could have sent her back early. But she needed to spend her time contemplating whether she needed to speak to the person she was jumping in front of. I was trying to help her out. See?
You know, I was.
You didn't see the
Guinness
story, did you?
Yeah, I think so. I was getting on the bus. I took the bus a couple of days ago, and there was a long line getting on the bus, and this long line of people, it was really cold outside too, and all of a sudden I noticed that there's this young lady, you know, a teenager, standing at the very front of the line. So sometimes, Ryan, you might remember this, sometimes when you see the line is very long to get on the bus, over at the terminal where all those buses, where all the buses stop, when you see the line is very long, you just start a new line for the next bus and say, oh, you know, forget it, I'm not going to stand up, I don't want to stand up on this bus, so I'll just wait for the second bus. And then everybody just who's online will go ahead and get on, and then you start the new line for the new bus. So initially I thought that's what she was doing. I haven't ridden a bus in a long time from Parsons Archer. But what I noticed that everybody, as they got to the bus, they were trying to squeeze their way into the bus. So what she did was she came and blocked the door to get on the bus because she wanted to cut in front of everybody. And so people were, like, trying to push her out the way without pushing her out of the way because they didn't want to start a fight, because you just never know what these folks have in their pocket or whatever they might try to pull. So people were trying not to fight her, but trying not to let her get cut in front of them. So everybody's like squeezing their way into the bus, and she's trying to squeeze everybody out of the way so that she can cut in front of people getting on the bus. It just really baffled me. And finally, eventually though, she did just push somebody out of the way and just got on the bus. I don't know. I don't understand it.
Now, see, yeah. I understand it, though.
You do?
Yes. Because remember when we were young, if it's cold and you have to wait for that next bus? Suppose you know how cold it used to be, and sometimes you have to wait for that next bus? You could end up in tears.
But it wasn't that cold. It wasn't that cold. But yes, I do remember that. And if that was the case, you could just ask somebody, do you mind if I get on or something, instead of just push. I mean, she was pushing, like, big guys out of the way. And it was just so bizarre to me that she was doing that.
She was pushing people?
She was trying to prevent folks from getting on the bus so that she could push her way in front of folks. And people would just not let.
You know, the New York are different. This is a different, yeah. This is a, I'm yeah, because I know there's a lot of New Yorkers, so I'm going to just try to tread lightly on that subject, but they are different. Even though I am a New Yorker, but I don't know, the behavior is really, it's a lot. It's deep. I don't get it. I don't get the people. I don't understand why they have to act like heathens. I'm just going to call it the way I see it. They act like heathens a lot of times. It's just really embarrassing.
It's a problem. I was very disappointed in her behavior. But let me see if Daquan is on the line now. Daquan, are you there? That's not Daquan then, I guess. Is that
call him back?
Would...
you have
Daquan
to call him back?
Oh, yeah. You know what? You guys talk. I'm going to call him and see if I can get him on the line.
That is funny that she just did that. Kathleen, she probably has us on, muted us out by now. But no,
here.
Never mind. Go ahead.
Okay.
Get him on the line. we'll just keep going.
So I wanted to know, hello?
Yes.
So you said something about Mitt Romney, and I lost track.
Oh, no. I was making the point of Mitt Romney and his feeling privileged, right? When he and his wife was interviewed about, you know, tying the dog thing on the top of the car, they were laughing, saying he loved it. It's like, how do you actually know that a dog loved it? It's like, because he'd be so excited. So, you know, he wanted to be there. And so that's kind of like out of touch to torture. It's like saying doing slavery. You guys seem so happy.
Oh, yeah, you were happy. You used to sing every day.
Exactly. See, and that's all I mean about privilege. Privilege say that if you are okay with your condition, then we're happy for you for being there because we don't want you here.
That's right.
Right?
I get it because I love him in the sense that he is so off the charts when it comes to relating to people, and he can't get it.
Right.
You finally, young man?
Yeah, I just called him, and he said he said he was trying to talk, but we couldn't hear him. So he's going to call back.
Oh, so maybe you muted him, or maybe he was muted.
Well, not on the soundboard. He has a red mic also, so I'm not really sure. Daquan, are you there? Dave?
Yeah.
No, he's not there. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but so in Mitt Romney's case, it was an issue of privilege more than anything else. So just to see them, they're very smug about privilege, right? So they say things like, "I like firing people," right? You can't say that unless you actually have some kind of dominance over somebody else. But to actually be happy about that is kind of crazy to the rest of us. Right, because that's a power trip. So anyway, Mitt Romney does that all day, every day. So every time he talks, his ad-libs are always going to be hilarious. There's no way that he can win because once he starts talking like ad-libbing, he's going to say things like, "Well, you just need to go get a job." Like he's going to say that because he said it before.
Wait a minute. There are people that are voting for him.
Look at it this way. There are people who, think about it from a political standpoint, that the Republicans hate the Democrats. And then there are some white folks who hate black people. So if you're a Democratic black person, you cannot be surprised by the hatred on the other side of whatever your political party is. Right? And so it's not an even hate either. I was just speaking on a political show about this. That the issue is that in this country, there are about 25% Republicans across the board. It's only 25%. The Democrats are about 36-ish percent, a little bit over 38%. And the independents are in the 30s, right? So there's more independents than there are Republicans, but they're less than the Democrats. So the truth is that when you keep mirroring up Democrats against Republicans, it's not a 50-50 split. You're only talking about 25% of the electorate that cannot stand the president.
Oh.
But
they have no reason why. Do they have a reason?
Huh?
No. Well, he's done nothing wrong.
Well, it's not about him doing right or wrong, though. That's the point. That's why the Republicans can't get any traction, because even Republicans like the president. The Republicans on TV hate him. So when they will only put somebody on television who are the polar opposite, you think it's 50-50 because they split-screen those guys. And it's like, I hate them, I like them. I hate them, I like them. And that gives you an impression of 50-50, but it's more like 25-75. That's why his polling numbers on the likability and all that other stuff should not naturally be that high. It is really crazy. They have like 9 polls that show the president has good numbers and one that is bad and go, "Well, that's the one that counts." Like they pick the one that counts. No matter which one.
They're amazing.
They are amazing. Whatever one is lowest for him is the one that counts that particular day.
Okay. Kathleen, did you find the gentleman?
He just called me on my cell phone. Hold on a second. Daquan?
See, she's not paying us any attention. I know. So since we thought we'd make it a political discussion before we get to get in.
Yeah.
His line on.
Uh-oh.
Technical.
She's still having technical difficulties?
Sounds like
it. Yeah, we're having technical difficulties. She said that they can hear us talking, but we can't. He's trying to talk, but we can't hear him. But the thing is, you know what I'm going to do? Let me see. Okay, Daquan and your mom, Patricia, if you guys are listening, I'm going to close out the line on the board and then just call back in. Because they may be hanging up, but it's not.
And they're on call waiting.
Right. So, but their call does not leave the board. So for some reason, I don't know, I'm not sure what's going on there. So hopefully he can just call back in. So anyway, so you all don't think Mitt Romney's got a chance?
Well, it's
hope not.
Well, well, go ahead, Ronnie.
That's all I had to say. I hope not.
No, I say he doesn't have a chance, but here's the problem with that statement, is that they are banking on the fact that the only way the Republicans win, you have to remember, generally, as 25% of the voting population, that means Democrats cannot vote. So you need really low voter turnout on the Democratic
side.
That's
the issue, right?
But that's how it normally works. So it's not that midterm elections there was some ideology change that people can't stand the president. What happens is that during the midterms, people normally don't vote at the same rate. And so then the Republicans have the advantage. So they got more votes in 2010 because there was a lower voter turnout. And proportionally, it always helps Republicans. This time it's not going to help them because presidential elections, you always get most people out. Plus you have the Occupy movement stuff that's going to kick back in. I think people are forgetting about that, and I don't know why. Like, we are so cynical in this country about people who adamantly have some type of disagreement. It's like violence in the black community, for example. If somebody dies in the black community, people want to do fundraisers, but people will not appreciate the black business that's going on to keep people engaged so that they don't have to engage in negative behavior or negative activity. So businesses in the black community don't have the organizations in the black community don't have the capacity to fundraise because they never think about that until somebody passes, and then we raise money for someone. It's always on the negative.
So
it's a kind of a perspective thing, but we don't see how that hinders us more than helps as a community. But on the Republican side, so in the big picture, I should say, that Republicans need, that's why those voter ID laws, they all put them in 2010. That's why the voter suppression stuff started happening, because they needed 2 years of voter suppression to make sure that those numbers come down for the presidential race. And then if they're negative enough, they anticipate that the people won't vote. But what they're not anticipating is the Republicans don't like the Republicans. They have bad voter turnout for the whole primary season. Their numbers
are really Well, I'm proud of the Americans in regards to Newt Gingrich, because I did have odds in the beginning when he started to run, because he has been a thorn in the side of the United States for as many years as he's been in politics. And to see him come back again was just, like, it was unbelievable to me.
Nope.
So the fact that nobody has voted for him, I've been very, you know, I wish him well, but I was very happy to see that people were not willing to, you know, buy into his politics again.
If you think about it, you can see the frustration in the Republicans. Like, they're averaging kind of about 9% voter turnout during primaries, somewhere in there. Probably lower. And the problem is that your extremists are coming out, so the people who are even moderate as Republicans can't stand those guys. Like, like normally, I can't imagine if somebody ran for office on the Democratic side who had divorced their wife when she had cancer, when she was in the hospital, and then left the guy who impeached Clinton in the House when he was Speaker of the House.
Right.
Intern is now his wife. He was sleeping with her when the Monica Lewinsky stuff happened. He was sleeping with his intern.
And then he brushed it off. And he brushed it off like, well, I've made mistakes. Okay, yes. So you have to understand that
only works on the Republican side.
Hmm?
Democrats don't forgive. On the Republican side, they say he apologized. It's like the Trayvon Martin. Well, he apologized. It's like, really?
He apologized.
Really, that's all you have to do, and he's good?
He's good.
Yeah.
And
he
apologized, and he did do some things that were not correct. And
he didn't apologize, really.
But, I mean, everybody deserves a second chance. But I just didn't see where he was going to do our country any good. He wasn't good before. None of the politicians seemed to be on, and you know, no, the politicians seem to not like his bill of fare. I've heard too many things that they didn't care for, and so they were like, "Not him again."
Well, he had a very slim chance of winning to begin with. Nobody, most of the time out of our political seasons, from our presidents going back to George Washington or Ulysses S. Grant, if they're not like highly ranked military, in those times military was kind of high politically, but our presidents only come out of the Senate or their governors. You have to be able to carry at least a state to be in that pool in our presidents. It's just kind of how we voted over the past, you know, century or so. So the problem is Newt Gingrich was a congressman, and he had a small district near Marietta, Georgia, and that was it. Yeah, people don't run for president out of Congress. They never win. So it's always a exercise of...
Mitt is a governor.
Mitt was governor of Massachusetts.
But the thing is, from what I'm hearing, the tone that I am hearing about Mitt Romney is that he just was local to Massachusetts and really didn't resonate throughout the country. And so
Massachusetts, even though you're a state governor, think about it in Sarah Palin kind of way. Sarah Palin in Alaska, the number of people in Alaska is not more than the people in the county I live in. You know what I mean? And so if you think about it relatively number-wise, you have a small captive audience.
Exactly.
And so it's pretty easy to gauge, like, mentality in a small captive audience than this country. This country is huge.
I wanted to ask you about Sarah Palin because I heard a bell ringing regarding him picking her as a running mate. I can't imagine that he would be crazy enough to do that, but did you hear that?
No, but what happens during political seasons is that they float names just to see how people respond to it. It's kind of a matter of political strategy. Like you throw names out. If you get too much negative, you know that you can just mark them off the list. It's like people yelling Hillary. I mean, they're starting that bull up again, but Hillary won't run. First of all, even if she ran, Hillary won't win. I think that people will be really surprised by that, but I don't know why.
What is she going to run for?
President in 2016. They keep saying, you know, that might that's putting her back on the map.
Oh, Hillary Clinton?
Yeah. Bill Clinton endorsed someone in Pennsylvania, and they put a party on the ballot, apparently that's a Clinton party, and they won really big in Pennsylvania. So they're thinking that if they run her on the Clinton line in Pennsylvania, she's going to win. She'll probably win Pennsylvania. She was a senator in New York, so she won New York in the primaries, but... She wouldn't win against President Obama. Not while he is president. She didn't beat him in Illinois. So you got to at least carry your own state. Is the kind of the fundamental theory on that?
Do you think he should have picked her as a running mate?
Who should have picked her?
Obama.
No, he'd have lost.
He'd have lost.
Yes.
They just called me again, and I called him back again, and he said he's tried three different, as I said, try a different phone line. So he said he tried his dad's phone, and his phone is dead, and he tried, you know, the other phone, and it's just not working, which is so bizarre. I told him, you know, I would leave his mic open, so if he's able to call back in a few minutes, we'll get him on. If not, we'll have him on again next week.
My goodness.
Isn't that something?
You're going to have to take the caravan to his house with the microphone.
Yes, that's what we'll do. Daquan, we're going to come to you next time. if you can't get on, we're going to come to you, honey. We miss you. But we're here. If you can get in, keep trying.
Yeah, tell him to try a landline. The problem with the board and stuff is if it's digital, if he has a digital carrier, it may not go through.
And what's a digital carrier? like Time Warner or something like that?
No, no, no. You can do them like a kind of a internet-based, like they have. I didn't mean to do this all on the show. But some carriers route phone calls through digital lines, and it will not work in that board.
So you mean like, what's the name of it? The byproduct of Verizon?
Yeah, not Verizon. Verizon will work. It's just that
not
like
Verizon,
they,
but the one that they route their lines out to.
Yeah, you know how you have like Vantage and all of those
that's
companies.
Funny. I couldn't think of it. I knew it started with a V.
Yeah, those
Vantage.
Companies are.
Yeah,
those companies are voice over IT, and those won't really work well.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Right. I see what you mean.
Yeah, so you would have to dial in through Skype kind of way. It's a little bit different.
Okay, Techie Jerome.
But he shouldn't hear it either. So if he's hearing it, I don't think that's the problem. But he shouldn't be able to hear
us.
It either.
They can hear us talking, but we can't hear him. So there's some kind of glitch somewhere. And his line still shows up on the board too. So anyway, I'm not really sure. So listen, what did you all think about the president and his comedy routine?
I didn't see it. I heard that he was on Fallon, right?
Well,
was it Jimmy Fallon?
Yeah, he was on there, and then the White House Correspondents' Dinner was last night.
I didn't hear it. Who has a steel band going?
That's my phone.
Except there's a steel band.
That's my phone, sorry.
Okay.
I'm trying to keep up with... our guest to see if he's able to get back in, but it doesn't look like it.
Oh. Yep.
So was it good?
So. Yeah, it was pretty good. Isn't this the same one he did last year? Was it the same thing he did last year when they had the roast?
Trump? When he was roasting Donald Trump and those guys, yep.
Yeah. So that's what happened.
So He's wonderful. I saw him when he sang with B.B. King. His comedy is good. He can do no wrong, in my opinion.
Al Green, what?
Yeah, that was something else.
But you realize that's why people hate him.
Yes.
Okay.
Same reason. Absolutely. Because
fun. Yeah, we're not told this as kids, but it's a really fundamental law of nature, is that the more energy that you have, right, the more charismatic that you are as a person, you're going to build up equal resistance, so you need to be conscious of it. Nice people, it's not the fact that nice people finish last, it's that nice people are preyed upon. So I don't think the president is that. I think he's probably pretty mean, honestly, like between him and Michelle. I think they probably are. They'll put their foot
we
down.
We have a private joke that we only say amongst ourselves. It's like, he's from Chicago.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure.
I'm just going to leave it.
But we can see that. That's a cultural thing too. I just want to say that.
What's
that?
Okay.
We can see that as black folks.
Any man, like, any man that would send his team out and kill Bin Laden overnight, he's not as nice as.
Joke a little later.
Yeah.
He could
be nice.
But yeah,
I don't want him to get on his bed.
No. I told you guys. I can't say this on the air. So later, I'll tell you. Remember, I told you I met him.
You did tell me that. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, so I won't say that story on the air till after the election.
No. But it's not a bad story. Like, see, the thing is that to be in that position, you have to be able to back people off you. And that's the thing about being in leadership generally. Leadership is a responsibility in leadership. And so for you to be charismatic enough for people to follow you, you have to be charismatic enough to leave some people. And so you back people off you, other people will respect you for that. So there's
You have to.
Oh, yeah, you have to. And that's all I'm saying is, like, we give people the impression, like, you have to be this way 100% of the time. And it doesn't really work like that. You'll be caught in the midst of something if you actually operate it that way in your regular life. But people who are charismatic, it's like you know, something that I'm just going to say this because we said this too much tonight. I was going to say I normally don't say out loud, but I'm going to say this. It's like those kids at Columbine. Their issue was, I don't like the cheerleaders. I don't like the popular kids. I don't like that. They don't like anybody who cannot flash that they have money. Those kids drove to school in BMWs, and since people didn't like them for being wealthy, they hated on everybody else. And that's generally how the Republicans are, generally. They're saying to you, we don't like him because he's popular. They're running commercials saying he's a pop culture guy, and they're hating him for that.
That commercial says that he's too cool, right, with the dark glasses on and all that. He's like, he's too cool to be the president. I'm like, come on.
They don't know the people who vote for him because he is. They're like, no, I like that. Like, they don't know that they're advertising for him.
Well, he already is the president.
Right, but again, they're only talking to a small group of ignorant, crazy people, though. See, that's the thing about politics is that when they target market advertisement like that, they're talking to they're thinking poor working class white folks. They need to get to him on the rural areas, and so they're like, we're not going to do anything in inner city. We can't talk to black people at all. We can't really talk to Hispanic people, and they can't talk to Hispanic people either. And so their issue is, we need to get all the white folks to vote for our guy if white folks are the primary voters, or primarily the voters. And so that's a strategic trick. It worked in the past. That's why people keep bringing up the Sister Soldier moment or the Willie Horton stuff. They bring that up because that's a trigger for race. And people hate to call people racist, but I don't. You racist, deal with it.
Kathleen.
Uh-huh.
What's the Sister Soldier moment?
That's the thing that went down with Clinton and Sister Soldier.
What?
Wasn't it Bill Clinton, Jerome?
Yes.
Bill Clinton,
it was during the presidential election of Bill Clinton where Sister Soldier came out and said something about just generally how white folks, because that was drug age. It came out of the Just Say No stuff with George H. or after the Reagan folks, and then in the Clinton stuff, war on drugs. And she was pretty much primarily making the point that drugs aren't flown into black communities by black folks. And Sister Soldier was just kind of making the point that it is not all us. It is the government's responsibility to some degree if they're responsible for putting it here. True indeed. So
indeed.
His Sister Soldier moment was him saying, that's race baiting, is what Clinton said. So when the Republicans kind of went at the thing, his Sister Soldier moment in the Democratic Party was the fact that he stood up to black people. That's all that means. So whenever you hear somebody say it was a Sister Soldier moment, that means when you can stand up to not pacify black people. And they patted Clinton on the back for years for that. He made race an issue by saying, there are racist black people, is what Clinton was saying.
We're racist black people.
Yeah, he was saying there are racist black people.
Well, that's a fact.
Well, not really. But what he was doing was this. He was baiting people who vote against the people who don't vote. So when you want to start throwing stones at why people are in the condition that they're in and you want to start calling them names, that's weak. So what he did is he pacified the people who the Obama's cool thing is targeted towards. They're talking about a specific group of people that don't like black people. He had his moment where he proved to those people that he don't really like black people like that either.
Oh, I get it. Okay, now I get it. All
right. Right. So, yeah, he's like, I don't love them, but then he goes on Arsenio. So think about even the process from you hearing this story. Think about how that works. You didn't hold on to the Sister Soldier moment because you don't really remember it, but the white folks who needed to believe in him as being a redneck held on to that and said, I remember the fact that he distanced himself from black people. Black people remember him from being on Arsenio. See how that goes? You target market.
Oh, okay. And plus he moved to Harlem.
That was after the fact, because after the Monica Lewinsky stuff, people were judgmental of him, and white folks was having issues with him. So you find comfort in black folks. Black people are forgiving. Yes. So, I like to remind people of the fact that when you look at the 60s footage of integration in schools, notice that in the white schools is where they were yelling and throwing stuff at the buses, but they weren't doing that in the black schools. It wasn't because they didn't have cameras at the black schools. It's because nothing happened to the white kids who were bused to black schools.
No, because we don't care.
No, black people will protect white folks.
That's what I mean. That was our position anyway in this country when we came here. So, I'm sure that's still in our.
I don't know.
Still in
DNA. Yeah, but it's still kind of it is kind of balanced in this as well. Like what happens is, black folks had take a couple of positions in that. One would be, something happened to that white folks, we know that white folks are going to come in here like crazy. So then there's those black people, right? So they'll still protect them. And then there's those black folks who protect them based on fairness and say, they ain't did nothing to you, leave them alone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So black folks don't let, in black communities generally, that's why black-on-black crime is like 95% black people on black people, and white-on-white crime is 95% white folks on white folks. That's why that is. That's why every community has its own mob, too. There's the Irish mob, Italian mob, black. That's why. It's because if you integrate wholly with another community and you're not kin to them, at some point they're going to roll on your butt. And you can't have that.
Okay, I got to ask about the Al Sharpton comment made by the other man, Michael Bazin. Is that... I need to hear more. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's buzzing about the two stations merging and the fact that Michael Bazin said something about President Obama the other night. I didn't hear it. Did anybody hear it?
No, I don't know what he said.
Okay.
Michael Bazin said something about the president?
Yes, they said he hates him, and I didn't know that. And then he said something bad about him.
Michael Bazin?
Mm-hmm.
Michael Bazin doesn't hate the president.
No?
No,
okay, maybe,
not at all.
Okay, maybe that was hearsay then, sorry. But he said
sure
something crazy about
the Smiley Cornel West issue?
Okay, it could have been something I misheard. I'm just asking, did you guys hear him say something about President Obama?
Oh,
then
no.
He got fired. You said he got fired, so he said something about Al Sharpton. Is that true?
I don't know.
I'm okay. Kathleen?
I don't know. I remember when I went to see Michael Bazin, I saw Michael Bazin in person like in February, I think it was, and he said that there was a lot of changes getting ready to come down on the radio stations, and he said one of them is that he's been told and all the other disc jockeys were told that their ratings are low, and because their ratings are low, they were told that their ratings were low because they're doing too much talking and not enough music playing. So
they said, get a hologram of Frankie Crocker.
Right, so they're telling them that they wanted to cut back on all of the social activism and just play more music. So Michael Bazin was saying, so when you see or you hear the changes in the programming, it's because the producers are telling them that they can't talk as much, right? So he went on to say that he was thinking about leaving, but he told them that he told the station that he wanted to stay until his contract was up for renewal, I believe. And basically what he was saying is that he wanted to extend his contract only through the end of the election. And after the election, then he would, bow out and, look for whatever he was going to do next. And so, given that he said that in public, it was my understanding that he was for the president because that's what he was saying, that he and a lot of the other black disc jockeys in the country were had a significant role, played a significant role in getting the president elected. So he wanted to make sure that he still had that platform while the president was running for office this time. So now that was in February. So I don't know if he knew that this was going to happen, but I think it's strategic that they had this this issue come up where they fired all of the social activists and community activists from the radio station right before the election got hot and heavy, because Steve Harvey has the president on every now and then, but as soon as the president goes off, he's back to being, you know, Reverend Def Jam and Bishop whatever, you know, doing nothing like, because, like, Steve Harvey is funny. I'm not saying anything against Steve Harvey, but some days you just, I just don't want to listen to that. Or if I listen to it in the morning, you can get the social issues and what's going on in the afternoon. And Michael Bazin was organizing and doing marches and doing stuff and letting you know what was going on in the community and gathering people around those issues. And I'm not the biggest Michael Bazin fan either, but he certainly, you know, put his mouthpiece where it was needed when it came to a lot of these social issues. And one of the things that he, you know, he didn't have a lot of the other stuff that Steve Harvey had. I guess he's not a comedian. He had a decent show and all these other topics and stuff that he would bring up. But they, you know, strategically, they fired him. They got rid of Open Line, and they had a standoff outside the station this morning, because this morning was the last show for Open Line. And
what's Open Line?
Open Line is a talk show that's on that was on every morning on KISS with three gentlemen who are, you know, I think it's three or four of them that are community activists. And they would talk about every single issue that was affecting African Americans, Black people around the country, but definitely in New York. If something was a mess that was going on, they had it as a topic on Open Line. So it was the only forum, really, talk forum with people who are actively engaged and involved in the community, and everybody that's connected to the community in New York, they would be on the air talking about it every Sunday morning. So Sunday morning was like, you know, most people will sit down and say, okay, they got to watch Meet the Press. Well, if you are Black in New York, you had to listen to Open Line. And that's basically what it was. So people had a fit this morning when Open Line, they was telling us that Open Line did not get picked up by BLS. So they were getting rid of Open Line, getting rid of Michael Bazin, and putting on Sunday they had all gospel programs, and then gave the night guy like 6 to 8 hours or something, and they just they couldn't find a place for them. And people were mad, so they went and organized in front of BLS this morning from, I think it from 12 to 3, and they got on the air. They were fortunate enough to get through, because today was their final day, so they were giving their thank yous and letting people call in and tell them how they felt about the show. And so one guy got through, and he was saying, look, anybody who's listening to you guys right now, you still got time, get on down here in front of BLS at 395 Hudson Street. We're out here. We're protesting. We are not letting them take our show away. So, and when you guys get off the air, y'all come down here too.
And
so people went down there. So within 20 minutes, the station manager from BLS called in and said, you know, well, you know, we couldn't bring over every show, and this is how it's going to be, you know, but we wanted to bring over Al Sharpton, because, you know, Al Sharpton has a show on KISS too. So we wanted to bring in Al Sharpton, and we didn't know how we were going to be able to get enough time if we were going to bring in Al Sharpton and Open Line, but we're going to look at it again and see if we can't get you guys in on Sundays after Al Sharpton. But, you know, everybody, you know, that whole yin-yang, everybody can't be on, we just don't have enough time. If I could do everybody, I'd do everybody, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, so it was a news break today that they're considering bringing on Open Line, but Michael Bazin is gone. And to me, they had, I think they could have found a way to get Michael Bazin on the air, even if they had to change his time slot. You know, I don't know if he would have been open to it, but I really think that they should have brought him over.
It was at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, right?
Yeah, he was like 3 to 7, I believe. He's 3 to 7. And the lineup now on BLS, I think they kept Jeff Fox, who's been there forever. They kept Jeff Fox. They kept, of course, Steve Harvey in the morning. And a couple of the ladies that they kept in the evening. I'm looking for it right now because I was reading it this morning to see what the new lineup was. Oh, Oprah's coming to New York. She's coming to BLS, huh? That's interesting. So that was the mess. So people are angry. You wouldn't believe how many calls I've gotten about this particular issue about the radio station. This, like, they're trying to silence African Americans in New York, and it just does not seem fair.
Well, okay, and so I want to say this about the whole thing. Now, you know, I contribute to Clear Channels, to a Clear Channel show, and for years. And so their issue is this: as a conglomerate, no, they don't like activism as far as black people are concerned anywhere. They're conservative. Clear Channels owns a lot of stuff. They own billboards. They own radio stations, own some television stations. And as the rich people are concerned, they will squeeze out black folks. So here is the thing, because Clear Channels owns a lot of talk radio. Of course, they syndicate Rush Limbaugh with a deal with Fox and all of that other stuff. So through Clear Channels, they syndicate Fox Radio. Now, I remember being in Clear Channels probably a couple of months ago. Or, matter of fact, last year when they were slimming down some of their stuff. What happened is that there's a law that passed that says that radio stations have to now not only collect royalties for the musicians, the ASCAP and BMI, they actually the producers, they literally have to start paying royalties to the artists. So they are kind of obligated by some new legislation to collect more money. So all of those companies were saying, we need to go to more talk radio. So they were flat lying to all the black folks by saying that their numbers, their talking more, is hurting their bottom line because they don't pay as much royalties when you talk more opposed to playing more music. So Clear Channels through some of the memos I've seen, they are really concerned by that by saying black folks don't listen to talk radio. But they're telling the people who are on music stations, y'all can't talk as much. So they're doing that on purpose. Right? It depends what lie you want to believe, but the truth is that they are trying to suppress, and I guarantee you right after election, they'll start asking people to come back.
Want us to listen to the rappers.
No, they don't really care about that. No, they don't care about that. They care about the money that they're making generally, and right now they don't even care about the money because they can sacrifice that. They care about philanthropy. Rich people don't care about money like that. They made a ton of money. They consolidated and getting rid of all these stations. And so when they consolidate a station, they figure they just ran the other guy out the market, so there's no competition. So they don't really care about what they're putting out. It's like Ice-T did the movie, I know it's coming out, The History of Rap or something, The History of Rap or something like that. But to understand that the companies who are not trying to hear any kind of hip-hop are all vested in it now. You know, except for Quincy Jones's Vibe magazine, even the other magazines that had hip-hop people on the cover just did that to make money. They didn't do that for the benefit of putting out hip-hop or that it's corrupting our kids or whatever. It is money-making to them fools. And so I say that just to say that this is really serious, and we can't, like, kind of blow over the fact that it has nothing to do with money. It has nothing, because they have a ton of money. It is about them controlling what you hear and what you see. So now that you have, now that everybody have internet and all these other means of communication, they are really kind of like putting through internet security laws now, because they need to suppress votes. They need to suppress your communication. So as much as the Republicans in particular talk about Big Brother and we don't want government in our lives and in our business, they constantly do these type of things to stop communication or even some kind of dialogue and thought. It's really interesting, but it's very blatant. Very blatant if you pull away from the emotion of all of that. It's very blatant. So Clear Channels does that across the board. They bought up all these other stations, and they're consolidating. But if you look, if you follow the money, Bain Capital, Mitt Romney's people, owns Clear Channels.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Yeah. Right? And so you look, you follow the money up the food chain, and you'll see how philanthropy is playing in the big picture in life.
So wait a minute. Why isn't that being put out into the...
Because all of the media companies are owned by other big media companies, right? So if you look at Entertainment Tonight, for example, Entertainment Tonight, parent company, owns Extra, who owns all of the gossip stuff that is on TV. So I don't care which one you watch, Entertainment Tonight, Extra, Paramount owned, right?
Right?
Who is subsidiary of Viacom, which owns...
BET.
Well, Viacom owns all of them, BET, VH1, and whatever, who actually have shows on ABC, owns CBS. No, they don't own CBS, but I think they're part of the conglomerate with, I want to say, it must be CBS. It got to be. So anyway, those guys at the top are kind of filtered directive from the top of the conglomerate that way. So you can't really get anything on TV if you got a real beef with Warner Brothers, for example, because their parent company kind of owns Paramount, who owns Viacom, who owns whomever. So when you really look at it, there's a few people who are pushing down philanthropy. That's why you see Sarah Palin on Dancing with the Stars and on the Today Show. That's ABC and NBC. And the reason that they did that is because they're trying to normalize that crazy lady to the rest of y'all. They're trying to
normalize her. Not us?
No. Right, but they don't care about us because they think they lost us anyway. So they're trying to play to old folks. You know what? She's not that bad. She's friendly and she's likable kind of thing. But the thing is that this is where democracy has its tipping point, right? Because once... it's like kind of being, it's for me, fun to be a strategist because it's easy to calculate how to beat people when they rule with such an iron fist, because you can always anticipate their moves that way. You just go, oh, okay, if you're going to do this, by default, here's the path that you're going to take, so you need to do something different. So I say, like I always say, if black folks act as a voting block or even as a lobbying group and say, listen, if BLS does this, here's what we're going to do, and they need to do it.
Yeah,
but
I
can tell you what normally happens, though. You always have black people who say stuff like, you know, I ain't really down with them like that, and I ain't really like rap anyway. And it's like, what are you, nuts? You're not seeing the big picture. When somebody takes a shot at somebody in your family.
How do we get each other to see the big picture? Because I think people want to see the big picture now.
I think they do, too. I think we're coming into a spiritual age. I think we are kind of waking up a little bit.
Yeah, we're waking up.
So I would never talk about this stuff because I used to always think it was kind of hilarious. And my uncle used to say to me, and I used to get this a lot, too. They said, why don't you talk more? And I used to think it was funny. I was like, you're not really supposed to talk when you're not asked a question, for one. And two, you cannot yell at somebody who's not listening or who can't hear you.
Right. That's true.
That's just kind of insanity. And so people will get fed up. And again, the founding fathers of the country, even though Ben Franklin was pretty old by the time the country was founded and they really didn't want to listen to him, Thomas Jefferson and those guys were having issues with him. But I think that the point was very well made that when the people with money and power get too big for their britches, they can't do jack to make sure people don't vote against them. I don't care how much money you spend. When people are tired, they're tired. So you refresh the tree of liberty with discontent.
Yeah, people have had it.
Right. So So the problem with black folks is that they don't know that when you don't know you're getting oppressed, you don't think anything of it. So you have to, you know, every now and then people step over the line. It's like this whole Republican thing with women. You know, they've been trying to fight food stamps and civil rights and women's rights for eons since that legislation went into office. I mean, went into effect. They've been trying to pull it since then. So there's not nothing new for them. They're surprised that we're petty enough to say, well, I don't really like that guy, and that guy can't be that bad. And then he starts pulling out, you know, craziness. So the Republicans ran on jobs, for example, in 2010. They ain't passed not one jobs bill in 2 years. Not one. But that's what they ran on. They suckered everybody and was like, we need more jobs. It's about the economy. It's about the economy, stupid, that kind of stuff. They're doing that again. They ain't really give a damn about the economy. They know that if the economy goes bad, that they could just throw stones at that guy.
But the thing is, they don't care about the economy. They never have. They never will.
No, not at all.
Because if they cared about the economy, then gas wouldn't be $4 in New York State and two something in the other states, or $3.25 in the other states. What's the difference? I mean, is the air thinner in New York, which we know it isn't, that the gas has to be higher in New York? No. They just feel like we don't care. We're going to take advantage. And if they cared about the economy, they would do some other things. There's a lot of things that they could do to enhance the economy, that they could get people working. There's a lot of things they could do. They don't care. They could care less. That's not their job to care. And or to make, like I said, the economy wouldn't end up in the situation it ended up in if they cared about it.
Gas is high in New York City in particular because people in New York City have money. And so, like, their issue in New York City is always an issue of haves and have-nots. Like, that's their issue. But I don't know if you know, but do you know we produce oil in New York State? Do you know that? There's oil wells in New York State?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, we actually, Marathon Oil is from here, Hess, there's a bunch of other ones, but we actually produce oil in New York State. We don't produce as much as Texas, but we produce oil.
Because I know there was, on the West Coast, there was oil wells all over the place, but I did not know that there were
oil wells in New York State. Yep. And so the thing is that New York State actually produces oil, and the biggest, our GDP in New York State side is farming. That's where most of our money comes from. It doesn't come from New York City or the public finance, the financial systems of New York City. It doesn't even come there. New York State's money is in farming.
Agriculture.
Wine. Agriculture. It's in, yeah. And mostly dairy farms, too, though. So
well, it always been that, though.
Right. The state's large. We're a pretty large state. And again, the Adirondacks is bigger than, God, the Grand Canyon and Hoover Dam and all of those places put together, Yellowstone. Just the geographical location of the Adirondacks is bigger than the five biggest state parks in the country.
I want to know, is Romney, the race, is it going to be close?
You said, is it going to be close?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No, but that's not the fight. The fight is Congress. They won't get to that till a little bit later. But you need a Congress that's going to help the president. So I think people are deflecting to the wrong place. The Republicans are playing for 2016. So they're actually sacrificing Romney pretty much for this.
Oh.
Right? So they're flushing. So they're trying to flush you. So the reason the polling is bad, because people who are voting for the president ain't talking. They've never been able to get to them anyway.
Right.
Right? So you probably never received a phone call asking who you will or will not vote for. The only people
they've
who they're going to...
I do get a lot of phone calls from...
Call me every day.
I get a lot of phone calls from the Obama campaign.
Yeah, but that's his... Now, that is really important because the Democrats don't have no machine. It is Obama. People don't like the Democrats either. The president's groundwork is, like, they're not going to even be able to ramp up fast enough. They would have had to start last year to get that groundswell like the president has. They can't do it. The president has, I don't know, probably about four, I wouldn't say more than that, probably about six times more campaign offices than all of the Republican candidates put together. Six times more than all of them. That's why you're getting phone calls, and that's why I get emails and all of that other stuff.
He sends me three emails a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he came to my house when we didn't even have Google. Is it called Google Space? Google Maps.
Yeah.
Never
was. I had somebody from the work in Obama come to mine.
And
never
we don't.
Well,
you could not see us on the Google map. You know how you can look at anybody's street in the United States and see your house? Ours was not visible on the maps, and they came to our house four times to give us a ride.
Hey, I'm telling you, they're pretty efficient. Those guys work, and that's what energy is. That's what it looks like to be charismatic, to have people willing to work for you. They can muster that. I mean, it was amazing.
I had somebody, this lady called me, I think it was Friday, asking me before she could even ramp up, she said, well, do you think, I know she was sorry she did this too, she said, do you think the president is going to win the election this year? And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. I'm very convinced that he's going to win the election this year. And then she started to ask me for some money. And I said, but I'm not donating any money right now because I need the president right now to come to Queens and do some work right here. And because of this stuff, I was like, I want him to win. I need him to win. But the state in my particular community is dismal. And if he doesn't do something about it, this entire community is going to go under. So right now I have to put money elsewhere and can't give it to his campaign. But if you could get a message to him and let him know that this particular, you know, Jamaica, Queens was the highest income earning community for African Americans for many, many years. And now all of a sudden it is it has the highest rate of foreclosure than any other community in the United States. So I said, we went from being the highest income-earning community to be the highest, have the highest incidence of foreclosure than
you
any
know
other
why community. That is, though.
Yeah, because they targeted all the minorities and African Americans and elderly people with predatory lending. And in addition
not only
to that,
but property line is moving back from Manhattan, and there's no more good real estate for the people that want to be as close to Manhattan as they can get.
That's right, and they're building up the Racino over here at Aqueduct.
Exactly.
So they made a whole gambling adventure over at Aqueduct Racetrack. They're getting ready to bring in hotels. They're moving the Jacob Javits Center from downtown Manhattan to Queens, right outside JFK. So they're building up. They're going to change over Far Rockaway, which has another really high incidence of foreclosure rates and so forth. And they've got people coming in here to eat up these houses. And so I told her, I said, I don't know who you are or who you're connected to, but you need to get a message to him or somebody in his campaign or whatever and say, listen, we need to hear from you. So people, even if they gave $2, $5, $10, they would do it because that's what we did the last time. But right now, this community is being ignored, and they need to do something about it. So, no, I'm not giving you any money, but give him my best and tell him he has my vote.
No, that was way too much, Kathleen.
I went on for about 20 minutes.
Well, that's ridiculous. That was ridiculous.
I did.
Yeah, because you were just venting. You're just venting with him.
I know that's not what, I know you called me to talk, but I guess you're going to get a different phone call tonight.
You know what's more important than money? A vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like for any campaign, when you have a voter, that means you don't have to spend $25, $30 a vote. A vote is more important than any dollar amount that you can muster up. But the problem with New York City has a little bit more to do with politics in New York City, and it has to do with Bloomberg and it has to do with some of the federal money that stopped coming into the states because Congress is not allocating the money that they're supposed to. It is why post offices are closing, or they lined them up to close. There's a new bill up to fund post office for the next 2 years, but in 2007, they passed a law that said the post office must have X amount of $1 billion on hand in pension money reserved to pay health benefits. Like, it was something unreasonable. And that way they got squeezed out of money, so the post office started losing money, not because they didn't have it, because they weren't allowed to spend it because of the pension health care benefits that go to postal workers. So I know that's a lot. I just want to say this. Congress is obligated to pay the nation's bills, and they wouldn't. For the last 2 years, they have not given a dime to the post office, so the post offices are contracting. So the states are having problems paying teachers, firemen, policemen, because their federal funds have dried up. There's no jobs bills. There's no money flowing out of Washington to the states that they normally filter down to the cities. So now the cities are trying to fund themselves, which means they're cutting everything. So then that becomes, on a local political level, where are you going to spend your money? And that's why those realignments start happening. It has nothing to do with the president, but we have to change the climate in this country to say, you know what, even locally, I don't give a rat's what party you're in. If you are talking about doing this, I'm not voting for you. And then, more importantly, you have to get people inspired to run for office who don't carry those lines.
Mm.
So if the only two, if you have to vote for the devil you know kind of thing, that's always going to be problematic. The system just kind of needs to be overhauled. But problematic is the fact that, you know, like 40% of this country, the bridges in this country are under code. Like, they're under safety standards. So we're not passing any highway funding money. But right, the problems are stemming from a different place. The effects are someplace else. There's a cause and effect when you don't fund folks. So we can talk about Congress approval rating at being at 11% and why the country is so worse off, but it has nothing to do with the president. The president is not allowed to spend money from the Congress or he'll get impeached. We have a separation of powers that way. So that's Congress's responsibility. So until people realize that your local congressman is affecting your dollars, then you're displacing. And this is why it was important that they took civics out of schools. When you take civics out of school, this is what happened. People believe that the president is doing all of this other stuff. You know, gas prices going up because the president, it has nothing to do with them. Has to do with
well, we know that.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. It has nothing to do with them.
Right.
Hello?
But, I mean, that was my point. It's just that all these things are fallout around him. But imagine if President Obama was not there.
Thank you. That was my next. That was next coming out of my mouth. Imagine if he wasn't there. Imagine
well, that's
if
why I told
McCain had gotten in.
That's why I told her, I was like, well, he has my vote anyway. I need him to win. But you know, it would be nice if he could do something over here.
Yeah, and the problem is he couldn't.
Why don't you run for Congress?
Huh?
I said, Kathleen, why don't you run for Congress?
Oh, because they told me that. I was told that the Congress is an inside job. Let's put it that way. And you not
inside
only do you
baseball,
have
as white folks say
millions and millions and millions of dollars to run, but you
no,
have
no, no,
to
no,
be
Kathleen. That's the Senate, hon. No,
it was Congress. We were talking about Congress.
No, not you weren't talking to me. It didn't take all that for Congress. It takes about $30 million to run for Senate in any state in the country because you have to buy television time.
We were talking. So okay, this is what I remember, that the congressman has – you have to be accepted by the group, and in order for people to even work with you, you have to have mad connections and really know folks so that it wouldn't make sense to uproot a stable congressperson without – the foundation that you need to hold the position down in Congress and have people work with you. Isn't that true?
That sounds like hateration to me.
Right. That's what it sounds like. Congress,
somebody telling you, don't even think about it. You don't have a chance.
Wait. But Congress, think about it in the English way, right? Our Congress and Senate is based off of the House of Commons and the House of Lords. So if you run for the Senate, you run for the House of Lords, you need money. The House of Commons is your neighborhood congressional districts. They're smaller, not as many people, not as much work, and it's not as much money. Senate, you need money to run for Senate. To run statewide in any state, you need a lot of money.
So,
Congress, not
Jerome,
so much.
Are you telling me that anybody could run for Greg Meek's seat? Are you saying that I totally misunderstood what you said? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, because I know I didn't say that. If I said that, I was talking about something else. I would never have said that about Congress. Not at all.
Is Greg Meek still there, or is he not running again?
He is still there.
Yeah, but you have to raise some money for Congress, though. I mean, no doubt, you do, like, they're bigger districts. So if you think about geographically on what it costs, you know, lawn signs and canvassing and polling and, you know, just campaign staff generally, it does cost you a little bit of money. I mean, so if you want a campaign manager, you're going to pay that kid something like, you know, 50, 60 grand. I mean, that's only for about 4 months. So it just depends. You know what I mean? Like, it depends. You're going to get volunteers. That normally happens. But the professionals that work in those areas, they cost money. So Congress, the problem with the incumbency of congressional people is that they already have staff, so they can volunteer their time. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's hard to challenge them when they have paid professionals there and you have to get, you know, your cousin to answer the phones. That's why you have to raise money, just to get staff to do it, to do work.
What about the network of people and being able to get people to work with you on the Hill?
Please, people will find you when they want to pass something. Have you ever seen the movie with Eddie Murphy when he ran for Congress? Jeff Johnson, the name you know. Who is the distinguished gentleman? Have you ever seen that movie?
Yep.
And so he goes to Congress, he don't know anybody. So what they said is, we got a freshman congressman, we need another person in our coalition, so let's ask that new kid. And he's like, well, what are you for? Well, what are you against? No matter what you're for or against, we can find money for you. Right? There's people lobbying on both sides of this issue, so you're going to get money in Congress. So the fact is, you can go into Congress as a freshman, and somebody's going to say, let me mentor you. Because that means that as a congressman, they got two votes now. So, you know, if you look at it from a power position, it looks a little bit different. You don't really have to know anybody, but you do have to, somebody's going to have to tell you where the bathrooms are. So you're going to have to make friends in a hurry, or they're not going to tell you when to take lunch break, when to go to the bathroom, what time the vote is. They're not going to tell you. It's childhood moving to another school district all over again.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds like high school.
Sure is. Life is high school. It's like working for a new company, right? The first person that talked to you is probably the person you should not be talking to. It's the nosy person, right? It's like, hey,
yep,
so-and-so's having a birthday. We're having cake at 2. Come check us out. And blah. They're usually the nosiest person in that company.
The last job I had, the person that came and said, oh, I'm going to be your friend. You know how they say, oh, I'm going to be your friend. And they gave me 3 days, and they said, I hope you know this whole thing is going to close down. They don't have any money. They're 2 years behind in their rent, and you're never going to be able to work here because it's going to close. That
right, because they had the gossip.
Less than a month.
That's the only person that talks to you. That's why you should never tell somebody your business when you work at a company. Because the person who's asking you your personal business is telling somebody.
Yeah. Well, okay, so back to WBLS with the Michael Bazin. I don't know where else. I was trying to research that while you all were talking. I can't find anything that he said about the president or Sharpton. I also can't find what networks he's going to be on now. In other words, where in the country he's going to be on. I'm sure he didn't lose his spot from everywhere. Because while his show is syndicated, I don't believe he was out of New York. I believe he moved and was out of Florida. So, you know, I think he's still on the air. I just can't find out where.
Well, he's on air here, but he's not. Let's see, he's syndicated, so they sign contracts with other networks that syndicate them out. So I think since BLS has closed or merged or whatever they've done, I think that was just one of the markets that they're not in.
You can't follow him on Twitter?
Oh, you can listen to his show online.
Oh.
I mean, he's not going off the air. That's an issue of negotiating with specific markets. So the person who's your syndicator can shut you down. It's like watching Oprah, knowing that King World, who was owned by Merv Griffin, owned King World, they're distributing to other people. So the distributor has the agreement to get your show out. So when your distributor has a problem and they say, well, we're going to take you out of this market, it might affect your money, maybe, but technically it may not. So it's your distributor. Now, if he's having problems with them and they're saying that they are pulling his show, that's a whole other story. But I don't think he's going off the air here, so it would have made a bigger news story if he was going off all over the place. I think that's a local decision by that particular broadcaster.
That's
Yeah, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. What I understand also is the company that purchased did they purchase BLS? The company purchased BLS.
And merged KISS, right?
Right. And it's called YM something or another. And they're saying that the M in the three initials stands for Magic Johnson. So they believe that Magic Johnson is part owner of this company that did the major purchase. So initially they were saying that if in fact it was Magic Johnson, that Magic Johnson would have been more concerned about making sure that a lot of the diverse programming stayed on the air through, a lot of the BLS program would stay on the air. So apparently this article that I was reading was written in March. So they knew about this takeover, they knew about the purchase, they knew about all this stuff way back in March. And if Magic is involved and they took a look at it, they still decided that they were not going to go forward with keeping BLS there. And now they're keeping KISS on, and they are now turning KISS into an all-day, all-sports ESPN radio station on FM.
Well, I guess men will love that.
I don't think they will, but you know what's interesting about that is it goes back to my point that they're being lied to. You spend less money in broadcasting if there's more talk and less music. The music is what they were complaining about 2 years ago by saying that if this takes hold, we're going to lose our black stations because they don't want to play black music anyway, and they're definitely not going to want to play the royalties to the black artists that are playing. So they knew that this was going to happen. It has nothing to do with talk radio per se. It's what they're talking about. So even in new companies coming in, whoever Clear Channels or whomever, I think Clear Channels owned BLS, but whoever owned them prior and KISS, matter of fact, they owned both of them, but they sold them just to get out the market. So they probably said, hey, we're out of here. But you got to remember Magic Johnson, and one of the things I respect about Magic Johnson is Magic Johnson Enterprises and the conglomerates that they are, is that he don't make none of those calls. Like, they're just investors. Like, you have partnerships that you invest, and whoever is the majority owner makes the calls, the day-to-day operation stuff is those guys. So even though he's one of the owners of the Los Angeles Dodgers, he might be able to get some Dodger dogs and all that stuff, but Magic Johnson is not going to go tell them who to pick or who's going to line up on any particular day. So he's an owner, but instead of being – he's not a silent owner because they needed his name just to do promotion. But it's like saying Will and Jada owns the 76ers or Venus or Serena is down with the Miami Dolphins. They have some ownership shares, but those guys were given those shares. So technically they're not making any calls.
Venus and Serena own part of the Miami Dolphins?
Yeah. And Gloria.
Yes, too, for years.
Huh?
They have for a couple of years now.
Yeah. Yeah, because as a private company, you can elect to sell some of your private shares. So it makes it look good. Remember, the NBA kind of started this. That's why they give, you know, stars or actors good seats. Because if you're watching the game, you can see Jack Nicholson there, or you can see so-and-so there. So it made sense. That's why Will and Jada in Philly are always on the front row when the 76ers play, because they have some shares in the 76ers now.
And Jay-Z owns part of the Nets.
Right. That's right. And so, but don't believe that their shares are making the money either. Right? Their expenditures go a little bit differently. So they may be able to cash out of what they already have. And like I said, some of those shares were given to them. So they did that for an image sake. Like LeBron, when he played against New Jersey, a few weeks ago, he said he was surprised that people were cheering for him because he said, I kind of feel like I'm the villain because, you know, how he's been treated his first year when he was there. So when they won the game by some dramatic shot by LeBron, he took off his shoes, signed them, and gave them to Beyonce's nephew. Right? They were sitting Jay-Z was sitting on the side of the court. He went over to talk to Jay-Z. He introduced him to one of the other players, took his shoes off, and gave it to their nephew. Right? Those guys, you have entertainers at those games to have those relationships with the athletes to make you feel closer to whomever. It's an image thing. It's an image and marketing issue. So I said that to say that Magic Johnson, don't jump on Magic Johnson and pick it a Magic Johnson Theater. Magic Johnson is not that involved. Magic Johnson Theaters are a 50-50. Not, I don't think they're 50-50, actually. They may be. They're partnerships with, I think it's... You know,
we've been mad at Magic Johnson since he wouldn't let black people get credit cards in that bank. Remember the bank, Kathy?
Yeah, see, that wasn't his call.
You remember the bank that was on...
yep.
He owned? He and Janet Jackson owned this bank in Los Angeles. Yep. I can't think of the name of the bank. It's been such a long time ago. But no black people...
I remember they had interest in that bank. And,
huh?
And like I said, Magic Johnson has owned malls. He and Isaiah Thomas and Mark McGuire owned a pretty big mall someplace in Chicago, I think. Maybe in Chicago. I can't think of where it was. Because Mark McGuire is from Chicago, so that's what I'm thinking at. But wherever they owned that mall, they owned a lot of properties. But that's smart for them. But they're not running those businesses.
No.
Magic Johnson is on TV, I think, right now.
I saw him the other day.
Huh?
I saw him last night on the Knicks game, and I saw him the other day. Was it on The View? Was he on? I believe he was on The View.
Yeah. See, so he's not working. Like, he's not actively working any of those things. He's like, he's trying to do like Warren Buffett. You know, Warren Buffett. They just call him when they need money, and so he's like, okay, I'll give Citibank, $5 billion for X amount of shares, and I think they called him when he was at McDonald's with his grandkids, and it was like, we really need to talk to you during the financial crisis. And they asked him for $5 billion. He said, I'm with my grandkids. And they said, but we really need to talk about this. And he said, hold on. And the little girls were really sweet. And he was like, okay, I'll be with you in a minute. He cut some $5 billion deal, made, you know, like several hundred million dollars off of it, and kept it moving. And that's what
you're talking about, right? Because I heard about that.
Say it again.
Warren Buffett was with his grandkids.
Yeah, it was Warren Buffett. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I found the article. I took all this time for my internet to come up. So they're talking about Magic Johnson takes on WBLS and inner city broadcasting debt from Goldman Sachs. Now, this is dated May 24th, 2011. Okay, so they say the real loser in this deal may be Radio One, who may have just seen their opportunity to own a station or two in New York City just go by the wayside. Radio Info, or Inner City Broadcasting's debt will be changing hands, says TheDeal.com. So Goldman Sachs can finally take it off the books. Inner City's controlling Sutton family played hardball during the 2009 financial crisis when Goldman and GE Capital were squeezing Inner City Broadcasting over $230 million in debt. Politicians, reportedly including President Obama, got involved, and Goldman and GE backed off. The Sutton family would consist of ICBC Chairman Pierre Pepe Sutton, who is the son of the founder of the late Purdy, son of the founder, Percy Sutton, a former Manhattan Borough president, Harlem businessman, activist, and lawyer. Now Goldman finds a solution to holding the delinquent debt. It sells it to Magic Johnson Enterprises and Ron Burkle's UKPA companies. Earlier this year, Magic Johnson Enterprises and UKPA bought a big chunk of Vibe Holdings, which is Vibe Magazine, the Soul Train TV show, and then in April committed $16 million to buy three Phoenix area FM stations. Now, here's the inner city deal that includes New York market urban AC WBLS and gospel WLIB, plus properties in other markets. Note that holding a company's debt doesn't equate to ownership or control in the eyes of the FCC. This is probably frustrating to Kathy Hughes and Alfred Liggins at Radio One. They've talked for years about combining what's already the largest African-American radio group with Inner City. So they've been doing this deal for over a year, right? So that's what that one is talking about, Magic and UKPA. So now this is dated March 14th, 2012, What Now for WBLS, by Vince Santarelli. He's supposed to be the radio guru. What word is that Inner City Radio properties have been sold to YMF Media for $180 million. YMF Media was created by two UKPA funds and two Fortress funds, which own the senior debt of Inner City Radio Corporation. The M is believed to refer to Magic Johnson, who was already UKPA's partner in three Phoenix radio stations. That was from the previous article I just read a minute ago that was written in 2011. So what exactly does this mean? Well, it's entirely possible that YMF will turn around and sell their newly acquired properties to make a quick profit, or they may hold on to some properties and sell others. If they choose to hold on to WBLS, then it's probable that nothing will change with that station. With Magic Johnson a part of the mix, it's doubtful he would be looking to change the station's format. Should YMF decide to sell all properties, including WBLS, then you can bet next month's rent that Disney/ESPN will jump at the chance to get the station. They buy 107.5 and move their WEPN signal there. WBLS, of course, started as WLIB-FM. It was a jazz station. Inner City acquired the station in 1974 for $1.3 million. I could have bought that. WLIB-FM became WBLS early in 1972. The station started to show well in the ratings by April-May 1976 when they pulled a 5, good enough for third place in the market. By 1978, they were number 2 with a 7.7. And then they go on to give all the ratings and so forth. And the ratings just kept going up, 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 up. And then it says, along came PPMs in the last diary book in the city. WBLS was number 4 with a 4.3. In October 2008 in the PPM book, WBLS was down to a number 11 with 3.5. And that's pretty much where they've stayed since. So he's saying that In spite of the rating, WBLS is still a very important radio station in the New York market. It's a heritage station with a very significant history. Some of New York's best talent has passed by their microphones, including, of course, Frankie Crocker, who made the station the success that they became. To lose this station would be a shame. Let's just hope that maybe Magic Johnson has a big say as to what happens with the 107.5 in New York City. So, I, you know, if this guy is right, Vince Santarelli, then maybe they did sell it. You know, maybe they did turn it over. I'm not sure what happened because that part of the deal they're not talking about.
Well, and whether they sold it, since they already acquired the debt to sell it to themselves, like what happened, it's like taking somebody else's credit card when you don't have any credit. So if I had a $1,000 credit card, but I owe $200 on it, but you don't have any credit, and I say, well, I already spent $200. If you give me $500 for it, you acquired a debt, but you get $500 credit. So they took the debt and the credit for the station, and they have a value for it, and you don't know what they're going to leverage it against. So it doesn't make sense to pretty much sell the station and change the format. Well, it kind of does just because it cost over $1 million for an FCC license anyway. So being in the New York City market and the cost of getting one from scratch has to be really high in negotiations and stuff. It's easier to buy them. So it just depends what your bigger goal is. But more than likely, you wouldn't spend that kind of money from a station that has a value based upon what its programming is and then just change the programming.
Well, they did it.
They probably got it for something else. They probably are taming it down to sell it. So they're painting the shutters and cleaning up the inside of the house.
I think they sold it already because the ESPN Sports Radio starts tomorrow.
So Disney probably has it. Because Disney owns ABC, which owns ESPN. I know, that sounds so confusing, right?
No, I mean, I knew that. But it's disappointing is what it is. It's disappointing. But anyway, so they're doing, I can't be disappointed about their $180 million deal. God bless them. So moving on.
I was going to say, listen, I'm not going to sit home and drop one tear over Magic Johnson. It is now. Because he's got to be a billionaire by now.
He's stashing some money
up close to it because, you know, we were laughing the other day, but it's not, we were laughing about Magic because we started out way back, and I won't say way back, but it was pretty far back there in a day where we used to see him at the club that we used to wait online to get into.
That's right.
Remember? Everywhere we went, he was there.
Full circle. You see how everything goes full circle.
Exactly. So had I followed the party bus, the Magic was riding on. Remember, Magic was the party king. He was partying. Everything was a party. That's all. That was the only word he knew. He couldn't. He was very not well spoken unless he was just crazy smarter than the average bear. Because all he ever said was, party. Every time they gave him a mic, that's all he said. The next thing we knew,
yeah,
he owns the world.
If you watch basketball, you know Magic is not that articulate. So,
not at all. But before, he didn't even have an R. All he had was a party. Party. That's all he ever said. And we saw him out every night. We didn't even know how he played basketball. So now look at him.
Yep.
I'm impressed.
Well, you know what? I know we've talked about this before, but people very rarely look at the folks like Magic Johnson that does that kind of stuff. You have to network yourself into that kind of leverage. nobody gets rich in this country because they're good people. Somebody lets you get rich, which means somebody else has to make some money. So Magic Johnson, TJA Fridays, Magic Johnson, Starbucks, was all the leveraging of image of Magic Johnson, and he made money off of it. And you would think it was an ego issue of him insisting that they're Magic Johnson, but think about it from the company's perspective. If I'm Starbucks, I'm saying, all right, wait a minute. We got everything on lock, but we need more minorities. It's like the phenomena of this movie, of the Steve Harvey movie, right? It's like they make $33 million. They're estimated at making something like $60 million by today, right? It took them $13 million to make the movie. So the problem was that they expect to make their money on video sales with black folks, not necessarily at the movies. But black people are one-fourth of all moviegoers, which is crazy to not have any black movies and to be that high of moviegoers. We're one-fourth of all moviegoers. So what happens with the success of Steve Harvey movie, like it or not, it will spur more black movies. It's about what their return is on their money. Spent $13 million, got $80 million in the first 10 days.
Not bad.
Hey.
And it was a very good movie, by the way, if I might add. Hilarious. Kevin Hart was funny as funny can be. Wendy Williams was hilarious. Michael Ealy is just like a dream. He's like a dreamsicle. Michael Ealy's just unbelievable.
I can't wait to see this film.
Oh, my gosh.
And everybody's clamoring to see it.
Yes. She played the heck out of her role, too. She was just great. Morris Chestnut, another. I don't think he was in the movie more than 10 minutes, but another slam dunk for him. All he has to do is, like, show up and sneeze, and the movie's a hit. So he was.
He's back. He's been off.
Yeah, he's off. Yeah, he was in the movie. I don't think his screen time is more than 10 minutes, if that.
He's been off the roster for, like, years, ever since. What was that movie where he punched the guy in the face?
Your favorite Best Man. Movie?
Yeah.
Best Man, yeah. The Best Man. So, and who else was in there? Megan Good. She did a great job. I thought she did a really good job. Megan Good was good. And then there were two kind of, not newcomer guys. I think that guy, isn't it that guy from 106 and Park? Isn't he in it?
Yes, I saw him. Yes. I saw a cameo. I didn't know if he had any lines. Talking about Terrence.
Yes, he had a great role. He had a significant role in the movie. So all of them, and that was the thing too that I liked about the movie is that everybody, you know, it was star clad, you know, just nothing but stars in the movie, but there was no conflict, and it wasn't like anybody was trying to one up. They really blended together with all their stardom. I thought they did an excellent job with that, and even the folks that didn't have. You know, maybe you might think that one star is a bigger star than another guy or whatever. They had great roles together and played off each other really well. So I thought they did a bang-up, very classy job. Very, very good. Very well done. And as much as I went in there with my – I went in there snotty, you know. I was like, let me go check this Think Like a Man movie out and see what they got going on, you know. And it was good. It was really good. I want to go see it again, and it's definitely one for the DVD sale. So I'll be looking for it the first week so I can get it inexpensive. You know how they do it. The first week it's out, it's cheaper. So I'll be looking for it.
Congratulations to the Steve Harvey team. I'm very impressed.
Man.
Because $80 million in a weekend, that's a phenomena for any film. It really is.
Yeah, he did a great job.
I don't know if the Hunger Games, I don't know, even think did $80 million the first week, but I don't know. Because I hadn't kept up with it. I didn't see it.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. But I'm going to get back. Every time I go to the movies, which has been like, it's averaging out once every 6 months, I say I'm going back to my regular movie-going self. Because I used to go to the movies almost every week. Yeah. And I stopped going, but I'm going to start going back on Tuesdays again. So everybody listening, if you didn't know, Tuesday is half-price movie day. At least in New York it is. I don't know if it is around the rest of the country. But Tuesday, half-price movie day. Go check out your best flicks. And if you haven't seen Think Like a Man, oh, well, this is what I wanted to say about that. And then, oh, we got to go in a couple of minutes. What I wanted to say about that is they have done the most incredible marketing, though, for this movie. For Think Like a Man, the marketing was off chain. So one of my favorite TV shows is Let's Stay Together. Either of you watch that show?
Never heard of it.
Okay. Well, Let's Stay Together comes on Tuesday nights right before the game. And on that show last week, I think it was the week that this movie came out, the people in the series, in Let's Stay Together, pulled out Steve Harvey's book and said, "Girl, we're going to see this movie, Think Like a Man." So they in the TV show. I'm like,
they wrote it into the script.
Smart.
That's awesome.
They wrote it into the script. I was like, how smart was that? And I think they did it on the game, too. So they know all black folks are watching BET because these are the only two black shows that are now on the air that are current, right? All the other ones are, like, we're still watching Good Times. So,
hey, listen, Martin from 45 years ago.
45 years ago. Martin is like 90, and we're still watching him and Gina. So, and he got a divorce, too, by the way.
I heard the other day.
Yeah.
That's
so
too bad.
They wrote Go See Think Like a Man into the script of the only two current black sitcoms on television today. What? I mean, how incredible was that? I was sitting there, my mouth was hanging open. I'm like, this Steve Harvey man has elevated. He just, like, doesn't even walk on the ground anymore.
He's trying to catch up with Magic.
I have to say that. What you
trying
say,
to catch up with Magic Johnson.
Yeah, but this is not Steve Harvey's doing, by the way. I just want to say that for the record. Just because, you know, Let's Stay Together, which comes on, I think, in another half hour, another hour on BET. They're going to run three shows back to back. But Let's Stay Together is owned by Latifah, right?
Yeah.
And so she produces that show. And even although it's on BET, it was cool that they were able, sometimes they pay people to run commercial drops of during their show. But that was smart to pay them to write it into the script as far as, like, spending money.
Good. The marketing was incredible. That's why I'm not saying Steve Harvey. I mean, I'm sure he's not doing his own marketing. But whoever was doing it.
Right. Well, the producer of this movie, think about this for a black man. This guy did his last four movies, Obsessed with Beyonce and L, whatever that other guy's name is. But,
and I love that nobody
I
else
remember the guy's name.
Did you say whatever his name is?
Listen,
Idris Elba.
Oh, my God. We're never going to say
whatever his name is? Oh,
no. Idris Elba from The Wire.
Is that you guys missed Gabrielle Union. You barely caught Megan Good, Taraji P. Henson, who has
No, we love Taraji. Love.
You're like,
we love Taraji.
The
love.
Movie.
We love Taraji.
I called out all the names.
You did. You
what?
Said Megan Good. She said Megan Good. What's her name? Wasn't in there?
Gabrielle Union.
No, not Gabrielle. The lady that plays in every single black film.
Jennifer, what's her name?
Not
she
Jennifer.
Was a mother again. She has so many kids, she doesn't know what to do. Literally.
No.
She is a little old lady that lives in the shoe. Jennifer Lewis, I think is her name?
No, I'm talking about...
Everybody's mother
she's in,
every...
No, not her, though. I'm talking about the... it starts with an L. I can't... Just because I can
Divine.
See it. Yes. She wasn't in there?
Loretta Devine?
No, she wasn't in it.
I can't believe it. I can't believe I rolled the tape. There was a location that she wasn't on it.
No, she wasn't on it. But Jennifer Lewis was in there, though. When I saw her, I was like, there she go again. She's somebody else's mom.
Think about the star power of the producer, though. It is the guy who put these movies together, Obsessed, I want to say he did Best Man. He did it's another movie that had black people in it but wasn't a black movie. Like, he has, I think they said four or six straight number one movies as a producer. It's incredible, like Hollywood on Hollywood side. But it is, you know, you got to get a movie funded. And so you don't really do that as an author just by having that. You need some people who actually, you know, can get this stuff done. So the guy who did this movie.
They got plenty of money in Hollywood. They budget films. They know which films are going to do well. They do the best they can, and they have budgets. They got more money than
most. But they never really give black people budgets more than $10 million. Which is not that much money nowadays.
We're gonna. I hate to cut you all off, but we're gonna have to come back on this one. This was. I know this got really good towards the end, but we have like 20 seconds left before they cut us off. So for everybody, 10 seconds. So for everybody listening online, you can call in to 909-265-9189. We're gonna get ready to wrap up. Oh, I actually have a conference call, so I can't even stay on. So we'll be back next week. We'll be talking about more with Steve Harvey. He probably will have made $600 million by next week. But you all have a great week. Thank
good night.
You, Ronnie.
And we'll
all
go see the movie.
In here on Ask Kathleen. We're signing out. We'll talk to you next time. Love you guys.
All right, later, Ron. Later, Kath.
Later.
All right.
Really?